Hey, how's it going there, Reg? All right. I don't know why this microphone always changes. Who? I don't know. Do I? Maybe I feel different every time. Because it's, I don't know. Whatever. It's on. That's good enough. Okay. All right. Are we ready to go, Reggie? Good, good, good. Put it in the book. Episode 438. 438. Gosh. Wow. That's a lot of talking, isn't it? Hopefully it's a lot of listening, too. All right. Three S's. Countdown. Podcast. Book it. Star. Smile. Strong. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And why shouldn't we be? Of course, listening is important, but it's also important to get out there and tell everybody about this thing. So go to your favorite platform and tell your friends and tell your family. Tell anybody who listens to podcasts that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. And while they're listening to podcasts, why don't they give this one a try too? Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. And of course, for your own listening pleasure, whether you're a longtime listener or new to the podcast, you go to WGNRadio.com. Go to the podcast section, hit the prompt for this podcast. And my gosh, have we got podcasts for you? So many in there. They don't go back all the way to the beginning, unfortunately, because you probably break the internet. You've been doing this for 8 years already, almost 9. But there's lots there, so just keep scrolling down and loading more. What the heck? This is episode 438. So I know that a couple of weeks ago, regular listeners will know that a few weeks ago, I was mentioning to you a new show on television that that caught my interest, and I was intrigued and fooled and pleasantly surprised and sucked in and completely gobsmacked, if you will, to use a growingly popular British term that seems to have snuck into the American idiom over the last several years. I was gobsmacked. I was shocked, and I was pleasantly surprised and shocked that I got sucked into a great twist on a new show that now is up and running called Matlock, starring Oscar winner Kathy Bates. And I told you as to why I liked the show and urged you to watch it. I think it now has officially premiered. Or maybe, no, it will be premiering this week. It's second episode, but they ran the first episode in late September, and they reran it because it caused such a stir. And now the show will be on every, I believe, Thursday, beginning on October 17th. But, wow, I was excited to watch a TV show, the first one in a long time, to be intrigued and to want to see more and to want to watch more. And because it's on network television, you can't binge. You have to still go by those old rules of waiting every week. So there's something nostalgic about that. But this, as I said in the podcast, this is not your grandfather's or your parents' Matlock show. This one has an interesting, dark twist to it. So I would suggest that to you. But, it's not the only show that I recently discovered. And now I've actually got a couple more. It has been kind of a dry spell for television shows. I love television, grew up watching television. But in terms of recurring shows, there haven't been that many over the last several years that I've watched with great anticipation, either every week or binging. There are certainly a few, but in today's world, unfortunately now, with the streaming world, you know, we get 8 episodes and then we don't hear from that show for another year again. So there are advantages of streaming, no doubt, all this choice and all this ability to watch things whenever you want. I get it. I do it. I enjoy it, right? So I'm in on that. But the downside is that the good old network television days used to keep you entertained for like 6 months. The shows would start in September and they would end in May. And so you were dutifully entertained every week with 20, 25 back in the 60s. That's why there's so many reruns of the shows in the 50s and 60s. There used to be 30 episodes a year. Now, with all these streaming episodes, it's 8 to 10, sometimes even less, sometimes 6. I don't know where this 8 came from, this 9 came from. I don't know if it's because they spend a lot more on each episode. I don't know where the number came, but these shows, many of the shows that I watch are on streaming services now, sadly. Network shows aren't really cutting it anymore. If you watch the Emmy Awards that were on recently, you saw that most of the nominees in every category were all cable or streaming shows. Very few network shows, which really shows the state of television today. And if you don't have a streaming service, I don't know what you watch. I'll tell you what I've been watching, and this is no lie. When my wife and I sit down now in the evening to relax and watch some TV, yeah, there's still a couple of shows we like, and it's the new episodes are on right now, thankfully, and they come out every week. We watch them as they come out every week. Netflix still sends out those binge kind of things, you know, boom. You know, all the episodes, whole season at one time. But for the most part, a lot of the streaming services don't do that. They want that weekly kind of audience that the networks were used to. It depends on the streaming service and I guess the show and how popular it may be. But we do watch Only Murders in the Building with Steve Martin and Martin Short and Selena Gomez. Like that show. Funny. Interesting. I like a good mystery as well. Good murder mystery. It's got nice little touches of all that in there. And I'm a huge Steve Martin fan. And always liked Martin Short as well. Been a Steve Martin fan from... I'm afraid to tell you how long I've been a Steve Martin fan. Let's just say I still have my Let's Get Small album, and I was a member of the Steve Martin fan club, and I still have the certificate to prove it. And I saw him perform at a venue here in Chicago that doesn't even exist anymore, the International Amphitheater. So me and that wild and crazy guy go back quite a few years. But so we watched that one. As I said, we watched The Bear. We don't have every streaming service, so we are curtailed in that as to which ones we watch. We have Amazon. We have Hulu. Big fan of the Handmaid's Tale, which hasn't had a new episode in at least a year and a half. Still waiting on that. We have Max. Some good shows on there. But once again, you know, it's not, you know, you watch 8 episodes and they're gone. And a lot of times we will watch the binge episode. We will binge when Netflix puts them out. We'll find a weekend and say, okay, we're going to watch all of them. And boom. So then all of a sudden, like The Bear is done in 2 days or a day and a half. We're done. As I said before, in network television, you were fed these shows piecemeal over 6 months, kept you entertained. Today, you've got to keep looking. You got 8 episodes, 10 episodes, and boom, you're gone. If you watch them in a weekend, you're finished. I don't even remember season 3 of The Bear anymore. I watched it so far. I watched it the first week it came out, first couple of days. There's still a few network television shows that I'll watch, but not a lot. Over the last several months, especially in the summer, all of the original shows are gone. So there's only just reruns or horrible reality shows, which I don't watch any of. That's when they flood the market with all their reality shows a lot in the summer because there's so little to watch. Excuse me. So not a fan of that to begin with. So that's off. You know what we've been watching in the summer? In the evening? Instead of any kind of real entertainment shows. This is how bad it's gotten, at least in our house. I keep clicking around and I'm not seeing anything that's catching my interest. And all the streaming shows that we like, we've either watched and we're waiting for the new episodes to come. I have been recording during the day daily episodes that are on to watch at night in the evening. Thankfully, they're hour episodes. But I have been taping these episodes that are shown during the day so we watch them at night. And you know what they are? They're like 40-year-old reruns of The Price is Right with Bob Barker. And Barker's Beauties, Holly, Janice, and Diane, and of course, Johnny Olson. That's what we watch at night now. Reruns of Price is Right with Bob Barker. Many, many of the nights. That's how desperate we are for anything. And the sad part is there's a few episodes that we're seeing reruns of already. They're running these from the 80s. I don't know why they just have that little block. They seem to be from like 1975. I like the show. The funny thing is I like The Price is Right. But I mean, it's not like I loved the show. I never was a huge, huge fan of it. I'll watch the Drew Carey version every so often if they have a nighttime version now. So I'll watch that sometimes. But I don't record the daily episodes with Drew Carey of Price is Right. Scary part is many of the games that Bob Barker played 40 years ago on that show are still the same games that Drew Carey is playing. Talk about just a vehicle to print money. My gosh. Oh. That show, over the last 50 years now, more than that, has had 2 hosts. That's the lottery. You know, Drew Carey has won the lottery. I mean, let's face it. I don't even know how many years he's been doing that show now. But my goodness, you know, he's lost a lot of his comedy credibility, but he's gained, I'm sure, a ton in his bank account credibility. his portfolio has gained quite a bit. And I'm sure he's going to hold on to that job until he dies in it, almost just like Bob Barker did. And I don't blame him. That's the lottery. He didn't even know that he may have known that he won a lottery when he got that job, because it's almost like a Wheel of Fortune, like with Ryan Seacrest now, who's the host after Pat Sajak retired. Pat, I don't know why he quit. What did you retire from, Pat? Saying, no, there's no S. That's what the guy did for a living. Made $15 million a year to say, no, there's no S. Oh, bankrupt. Sorry. Go ahead. It's your turn. That's what he did. Hi, where are you from? Oh, great. I love Tampa. $15 million for that. So I think Drew's got his head screwed on correctly. He saw what that show did for Bob Barker. Bob Barker didn't want to leave that show until he physically had to. And I wouldn't blame Drew Carey if he did the same thing. My God, what an easy job, what a horrendous payday, fun. You got people fawning all over you, fun little job, easy. I think they shoot all those things within a couple of months. They shoot a year's worth. I mean, it's unbelievable. Unbelievable. But anyway, that's not what I'm here to talk about. Surprise, surprise. But I will say that's how slim the pickings, I believe, have become on watching any kind of television. I still have the cable. I didn't cut the cord, so I still have that. But I'm watching reruns of shows, even on that. You know, we have so much access. And even with these streaming services, there's all these movies and all these shows, but there's so few that are really good. So that's why when I find one that I really find entertaining and interesting, and I can't wait to watch the next one, I always tell you about it. Might not be your cup of tea, but at the very least, I want to make you aware of it, because in today's world, too, we don't even know what's on anymore. There's so much stuff out there, so many streaming services, so many shows, and there's not really you can go online and find it, but, you know, the good old days when you had the TV guide, there was a lot more hype about when a show was premiering and information about it. And today, all of a sudden, I mean, this show, for instance, I heard about it, but I didn't come in until the third episode, the one I'm going to talk to you about today. Another show that we watched that now is in new episodes, so we get a chance to watch that one day a week. We like the British Baking Show with Paul Hollywood and Prue. But I didn't even know that started a couple of 3 weeks ago. I said, well, hey, did you know what? We've missed the first episode already. So how do we know? How do you know? Unless I don't even know where to go. If there is some online, TV guide site or something that has all the premiere dates of the upcoming shows that are on all the streaming services, if there is one of those out there, would you please let me know about it? Because I don't know where to go. I'm just seeing this stuff as I surf the web. Do we still use that term? As I'm just clicking around here, I see, it started already? It's starting next week? Before we would know. You know, a new show is premiering 3 weeks from now or 2 months from now. Now you don't even hear about it. And shows just come and go. There's some shows that I'd like to see, but I don't have the streaming service. Paramount Plus, is one that is having some really good shows, but we don't have that. How many of these am I going to have? I mean, my gosh. I'm looking forward to Yellowstone. It's been a year or so since that started. It starts in November. So definitely watch that. But came to that years late. Thankfully, we binged on that about 2 years ago and watched all the seasons and got all caught up. Because finally, I've always been a Kevin Costner fan, and I was hearing so much about this Yellowstone. Never watched it, and I said, well, finally, let's watch it. And really got hooked on it. A show that I've been enjoying. I saw episodes on a plane, so I didn't see all the episodes. I can't watch the new episodes because I don't have Paramount Plus, but I did watch it over the summer because they put the first season on during the summer on CBS to get some programming that you can't get. Tulsa King with Sylvester Stallone. He does a really cool characterization. It's a good, well-written show about a mob guy that gets thrown out, to pasture in Tulsa, of all places. But at the same time, he winds up making Tulsa, taking control of the crime world in Tulsa. It's funny, it's violent, it's very dark, but Stallone gives it a little humor as well, and toughness as well. He does a good job. If you've never seen it, if you have Paramount Plus, you're lucky. Watch Tulsa King if you haven't watched it yet. I really like it. But a lot of shows, few and far between. I'm watching Bob Barker, and my gosh, oh, is it hilarious. When you watch these Bob Barker, it's the Price is Right reruns, if you're interested, are on in Chicago time, on Central time, two episodes from 2 to 3 and 3 to 4 every afternoon. I think they're even on Saturdays and Sundays. They might be on every day at that time. They're from the 80s. If you know about Bob Barker, the irony is that Bob Barker was one of the most beloved talk show hosts in history. He hosted that show for more than 50 years, I think. Almost. Well, maybe not, but close to it, certainly over 40. And but he did have some controversy when he was there. And interesting enough, it was with a couple of the so-called Barker's beauties, which in today's world you could not even get away with saying. But they certainly did back then. And, those were the three women that would display all the different prizes. And there was Diane Parkinson, and there was Janice Pennington, and there was Holly. I don't even know what Holly's last name is, to be honest with you. But Diane, Janice, and Holly were the main models that would be out there when they opened up a new car, and they would be showing it off. Today, I think there's Rachel on the Price is Right, and I know I only know her name because it's such a crazy name, Alexis Gobb. Alexis Gobb. And then, of course, because this is the 21st century, now there's men that also do it as well. So it's not just the models are women anymore. Now there's hunky men too. But back then in the 80s, it was still a very kind of sexist world. There's no doubt about that. And so you had this Diane Parkinson was a beautiful woman, had a great figure, and any opportunity to put her into a bikini, they did. When you watch it today, it's funny just to see how dated it looks, and it feels so. There is something of an ick factor, and then at the time, this was commonplace. But Bob Barker made some comments that during the show about Barker's beauties that the audience would laugh at, but they were bordering on sexist and harassment. And in fact, both Diane Parkinson and Holly, two of the models, sued Bob Barker for sexual harassment during his tenure. I think ultimately Holly won her case. I think Diane dropped it. I don't know if she settled or something. But Holly apparently was a little militant, and she was not going to give up. And she's, from what I did some, because I was interested in this, I did a little background information, and turned out the model on Price is Right, from what I read, she was in a 10-year lawsuit with Bob Barker and ultimately won it. So Bob had his little flaws, there's no question. But when you watch the show, he makes these comments and you just go, oh, wow. He makes them about the contestants, so some of the female contestants. And it's just, and the audience laughed and ate it up. No one thought they were rude or insensitive or inappropriate. That was the way of the world. So what's kind of interesting to watch the old reruns, it's not just the fact of watching the show for the sake of the show and all the little pricing games and seeing how much things cost 40 years ago. As I said, these reruns seem to be for the mid-80s. But it's such an interesting time capsule to see the fashions, certainly, but also to see the behavior and the way people thought. It's a sociological exercise as well as just mindless entertainment. But here's a show that I want to tell you about that is not mindless entertainment. As I said, when I find something that I like, that I really like, I certainly want to tell you about it and share it with you. It's up to you whether you like it or not, but at least I want to put it on your radar screen. So as I said, I would suggest, and I'm still waiting to see how, as I said the show earlier, Matlock, the first episode was great. They had this unexpected twist at the end, which sets up the show to be very interesting. And just now, but the goal is, will they be able to pay off this hook that they've created? So that will be, hopefully they will, because they've created an interesting little twist and an interesting hook at the end of the first episode. And now we're going to see how that plays out. And hopefully the show is well written and as well executed as that first episode was and lives up to the promise that the pilot episode did offer. But so here's another one that was not on my radar screen initially. And it was almost out of, I was reading some good reviews. This is the thing. It's like, you find these shows that, you know, there's so many shows that pop up and I read a quick description and say, well, is this going to be something that I like? And so I don't even bother. But then I'll start to read more as a show is on for a couple, 3 weeks, and you start to see a little momentum, and I'm like, okay, wait a minute. As I've talked about on this show, I came late to Game of Thrones, and the only reason that I decided to watch it was after the first season. After the first season, when I was just reading, I was reading about this Game of Thrones and people making a big deal about it. And then when the final episode of the first season was on, their review came out and I didn't know anything. I knew nothing about Game of Thrones or its previous life as a book, nothing at all. I'm not a big fan of all that fantasy stuff. But what intrigued me about the storytelling of Game of Thrones was I read that it killed, in its first season, one of its most prominent and most popular characters in the final episode of the first season. And I went, wow, now that's gutsy. That, if they're willing to do that, that might be a show I'm interested in. And so I wound up watching that, and then now we're a fan of not only the Game of Thrones, but now its new spinoff, the House of the Dragons. But I came to that a year late, or 10 episodes late, I should say, right? Breaking Bad was another one. The initial description of Breaking Bad is that a school teacher becomes a drug dealer. Not really into the whole drug scene, movies and television shows and all the violence and the crime like that. I'm not a big, I don't like car chases. I'm not big into that. So I didn't watch it for at least a year and a half, if not 2 years. And then finally I keep reading, and then it's winning, you know, reading about it, and it's winning all these awards every year, best show. I'm like, okay, wait, let's see what this is about. I mean, I, you know, maybe it's not my cup of tea, but maybe it is, and I don't know it yet. You know, I wasn't intrigued by the initial description, so I didn't give it a chance, but maybe I'm missing something. So thankfully, once again, back then, this is long before streaming services and things like that, there was a time when on cable television where you were still dependent, if you wanted to binge every so often when the cable systems had a good show, they would do a weekend, or you know, or they would binge the whole couple, three seasons. So I don't remember if it was season two or season three that we hadn't even seen up to. But one weekend, we binged the whole, whatever had been out up to that point, we binged the whole Breaking Bad, you know, seasons that they were showing up and coming up into the newest one, and wow, totally hooked. The show was not just some drug show. There was many layers to Breaking Bad. Came late to that one too. So I'm always a little with this track record of maybe being a little too judgmental at first. I'm trying to be a little more open-minded on shows, because sometimes my instincts are right, and there's a show that I say that doesn't seem to appeal to me, and rightfully so. It goes away in you know, after the first year, and it's not very good. But there's some other ones that I have also deemed not worthy that have become some of the greatest shows in the history of television. So I'm trying to be a little more open-minded, as much as I can be. So here's the situation now with this new show that I want to tell you about. I have to start by saying that when the first Batman movie came out in 1989, I was a huge, huge Batman fan from day one. I mean, when that film, the Tim Burton film with Michael Keaton and Jack Nicholson, I was on board. I saw that movie many, many times. I became a big Batman fan. I was buying Batman, merchandise, and you name it. I was in it. I mean, I was in my 20s, so I was still, you know, all excited by movies and all that. I was still in my collecting mode, if you will. And so I certainly was all in on Batman and when it came out. And, you know, just I was the Joker for, Jack Nicholson's Joker for Halloween that year. I mean, you name it. I was on board. Certainly, like everybody else, very disappointed in the second movie, Batman Returns. It was good, but it wasn't. It lacked something. I don't know what it was. It seemed a little darker. The other ones, I mean, maybe it was just that Jack Nicholson was so good, and maybe it's just that the Joker is such a great character and such a great villain that it's hard for Catwoman in that Batman Returns. It's hard for Catwoman and the Penguin to compete with that. And then the Batman series, sadly, just in my mind, throughout the early 90s, degenerated until Chris Nolan came back with Batman Begins and all that. That trilogy of his in the Dark Knight Returns. Because it just became comic booky. That was what was so great about Tim Burton's original, is that it had comic book aspects, but it also treated things in a realistic way as well. And it was dark, and it wasn't cartoony. It was real, as much as a bat costumed wearing crime fighter could be, and a Joker could be. And now, of course, you know, it really started this entire world, even though at the time nobody really knew it. But that Batman film, the Tim Burton Batman film in 1989, really is, it took a while, I think, because it took a while for the superhero comic book based film to dominate Hollywood as it has now for the last 15 to 20 years. And I think one of the reasons that happened was just because the movie technology, the CGI, became so more impressive that those movies now couldn't be as big and as crazy and as wild, because they could create anything on a computer. You know, Tim Burton still had to create many of these effects that you saw in the first Batman. But as the technology has advanced over the last 20 years, I think that's why the superhero movies in many cases took on such a great popularity. Now, of course, seem to be in a, based on the box office, the latest Joker has not performed up to expectations, with Joaquin Phoenix reprising his role and Lady Gaga in it. So there's something called superhero fatigue that's happening now, because there have been so many comic book films, and many times the same character just redone, Spider-Man, Batman movies. So because of that, while I was a fan of the original Batman when it started with Tim Burton, and you'd think that I would have been on this bandwagon, I'll be honest, I have not been on the superhero bandwagon that has dominated Hollywood. Probably the movie that started that, I mean, Batman, the Tim Burton Batman from 89, you can't trace it back to that, because it was the biggest film of at the time. It made over $200 million, I believe, which was outrageous in 1989. But it wasn't really until Iron Man with Robert Downey Jr. that seemed to kick this off, and it's never stopped since then. The Iron Man film seemed to be the one that started this trend. The Batman film from 89, certainly played a huge role in showing Hollywood that comic book movies could be done in a serious way, and could bring in box office money. So you figure, I think the first Iron Man film, I think, probably came out in about, 2008, somewhere around there. So yeah, we're about 15, 16 years into that. But yeah, there's no question that Tim Burton's Batman really started it. It showed Hollywood there's, if you do it right, you can make some money on this. And Iron Man, I think, combined the new technology of films. Robert Downey was great in the role, and also it helped that Iron Man wasn't the most popular and well-known character. So you got to learn about the character. Everybody knew Batman and Superman, but Iron Man wasn't a well-known, common name that the masses knew. Yes, there's no question that comic book people knew who Iron Man was, and I knew who Iron Man was, but in terms of an origin story or things like that, the whole Tony Stark thing, that wasn't common knowledge to the most casual movie fan. And so there was actually something to learn in that character as well. But for that reason, or many other reasons, whatever, I think that was Iron Man was the one that kicked off this trend that, like I said, has been now for at least 15, 16 years. But I haven't been aboard that. I watched Iron Man and I thought it was okay. I wasn't crazy about it. As I said, as you listen to this podcast, you know, I'm kind of a very guy that lives kind of in a real world. This fantasy stuff, I appreciate it, but I appreciate the realism within the fantasy world. You know, so I'll accept your flying dragons because there's some really great human stories in House of Dragons. I'll accept all your fanciful, you know, walls of, you know, cities of ice and these ice guys and all that stuff, you know, the walkers and in Game of Thrones, because there's some real human stories built in it. Even Batman, you know, on its face, you say, yeah, it's kind of goofy. And the TV show from the 60s really played up the comic booky kind of silly part of it. But at its heart, Batman is a pretty dark story. And that's what I liked about Tim Burton's film. You know, this little kid sees his parents killed in front of him. And he becomes a vigilante. And he's dealing with it, and he's and their murders haunt him. That's Shakespearean stuff there, folks. You know, that's Hamlet in some extent. So, you know, that's Macbeth to some extent. So I like human stories, human people, I mean, things like that. I'm more of a realistic person. I certainly, you know, don't mind the fantasy stuff, but I like the things that I seem to be most attracted to are things that are rooted in reality and the dynamics between people. I don't like car crashes and big explosions, and I wasn't into all the Arnold Schwarzenegger movies and the Terminator movies and the Rambo movies and all the other stuff. Just not into it. So, since I haven't really been at all involved in this entire trend that has dominated the films, it's one reason why I haven't been to movies in a while. Probably in 15 or 16 years, my movie going has completely diminished, because that's really the only movies that have been made. There haven't been a lot of movies about people like you saw like in the 70s, you know, where you had your Godfathers or your Mean Streets or things like that. Your Taxi Drivers. I mean, I'm a big fan of Scorsese, obviously, but yeah, you know, I'm not really a big comic book superhero fan. I didn't read comic books as a little kid like that. I bought a couple of them, but they never were my passion or my hobby. As I said, I loved the Batman movie. And I became a big Batman fan and something of a Batman aficionado because of that. But then, as the movies got more cartoony and more Hollywood-ish back in those in the 90s, and I left them, and I haven't really gone back. And so for that reason, I did not see the recent, I think it was in 2022 maybe. I did not see the Batman film with Robert Pattinson as Batman. I haven't seen any of them. I haven't seen I think the last Batman movie that I saw was so bad I stopped. And I think that was the George Clooney one. It was so bad. And it was just so ridiculous and awful. They just completely destroyed the original concept that Tim Burton had started with that. Joel Schumacher just, you know, made it a total silly, cartoony, comic booky thing, as opposed to the dark, perverse kind of world that Tim Burton did. And that's when I really stopped watching any of them. So I have not really paid much attention. I know they're out. I have seen the Bat. I did see the trilogy, the Chris Nolan trilogy, because he did bring back a little more seriousness to the stories. They weren't as cartoony and all crazy, effects and everything. But, and Christian Bale was great as Batman, no question about that. A real good actor. Not just some matinee idol or something to plug in there, but he brought some real depth to the character, just like Michael Keaton did in the first one. So I didn't see the Batman film with Robert Pattinson in it and wasn't really interested in it. Heard good things about it, but it just wasn't on my radar screen because I already been kind of turned off by the whole superhero trend that was dominating films anyway. But I did read, interestingly enough, as I read about the film, about the role that Colin Farrell, the actor Colin Farrell, played as one of Batman's well-known criminals, the Penguin. And it was intriguing and interesting because it wasn't, once again, cartoony like you see in the comic book, where he's wearing a tuxedo and a purple hat and a monocle and he's got a big nose and he waddles like a penguin and quack, quack, quack. And then, of course, that was even more exaggerated in the personification and portrayal by Burgess Meredith. It's hilarious. It's iconic, but it's silly. You know. And many of the Batman characters, because it was from a comic book, were outrageous and silly and over the top. The Riddler, the Joker. You know, even Jack Nicholson's portrayal of the Joker was still kind of, it was crazy. Then we've seen so many, we saw Heath Ledger, obviously, and then Joaquin Phoenix, however he says his name. Win Academy Awards, because the Joker is a very complex and can be a very demented and layered character. But many of the other Batman characters are very comic booky and silly. And so another Batman movie came out, and so whatever. And apparently the Riddler was a big enemy and a villain in that film. But Colin Farrell played the Penguin, and from what I had read, it was a very different portrayal. In fact, they had so much makeup on him, because he's a really good-looking guy, that you wouldn't even recognize him. He put on a fat suit, and all his face completely changed, receding hairstyle, jowls. Completely different from Colin Farrell. His voice is all, gruff, and there's no hint of his Irish accent. And so I had seen little clips of this, and I was intrigued by it. I said, okay, because if you remember, as I said before, in the Batman Returns movie from 1990 or 91, when Danny DeVito played him, he was kind of like a mix between a cartoony character and a real one. And he had the top hat and he looked like a penguin to some extent. So, they were still kind of in that. Whereas ever since Chris Nolan started with Batman, a more realistic kind of interpretation of the characters came. They were cartoony in the sense of what they were, but their motivations and their origin stories were very human and very twisted. They weren't just, there's a guy that makes riddles. There's a guy that dresses up as a clown and commits murders. They were layered characters. They were based more in a reality. And so I was intrigued. I didn't see the film, The Batman. And even, I think, the character of the Penguin wasn't a main character. He was kind of a side character. But I was intrigued by the way they were portraying him. And he was a little deformed in the way his foot was deformed. So he kind of walks with a waddle. But the term penguin was a nickname, and it wasn't one that he appreciated. He was known as his name, Oswald Cobb. Now, you should know that originally the penguin was called Oswald Cobblepot. So the fact that they even chopped up his name and just called him Cobb, because Cobblepot sounds a little silly, a little cartoony. So the fact that they even said, you know what, we don't want to make his name sound so obviously cartoony. He's already got this nickname as the penguin. He already walks with this kind of a shake and a limp because of this deformity in his foot, which is obviously the reason for the nickname. But he's a very gruff and dark character, a mobster. And so I found that interesting, but I didn't see the film. I just knew that he played the penguin, and I thought, oh, that's interesting. Well, then there was, you know, rumors that they were going to do a TV show based on the Colin Farrell character, the penguin. They felt that the character had enough of a backstory and enough of a depth of the way that Colin Farrell played him and the way that he was portrayed in that Batman film, that there was a lot of fodder there for a whole story about the penguin. And so it premiered, I think, maybe about a month ago on Max, used to be HBO, called The Penguin. And it was on, and I didn't watch it when it first came on, once again, because I was like, well, I don't know the background of these films. I mean, I know who the penguin is, but I don't know the whole backstory of the way they created this character in that film. And I haven't been a fan of these superhero films anyway. So I, once again, decided it's not on my radar screen. But then I'm reading the reviews of the first couple of episodes, and people are like, this is one of the best shows on television. And they said it's got hints. It's almost like a Batman version of The Sopranos. Now, I was a huge fan of The Sopranos. And if you even look at the way Colin Farrell is presented as the penguin here, he kind of even looks a little like a more gruffer and darker and meaner and uglier, certainly, Tony Soprano. But you could see the Tony Soprano similarities. And as I watched the show, even more than I thought, he's got a very interesting dynamic with his mom, just like Tony Soprano did. And there's also hints of The Godfather there too, but I see a lot of Sopranos kind of, I see it in Colin Farrell's portrayal, I see a lot of this dichotomy of his personality. And so I was reading these, when I see this, the fact that the show was getting these great reviews and being, I mean, there's not many shows that can be and should be compared to The Sopranos. It really was a great show. Whether you like mob things or not, it was so well written, so well acted. And it wasn't just about the violence and the mobs. This was a story about people. Once again, grounded in reality, and that's why I liked it. So when I hear that they even would think of comparing this show to The Sopranos, at least started to put a little thought in my head that, Jim, this might be another one of those Breaking Bads. This might be another one of those Game of Thrones. This might be another one of those The Bears that you might want to see. I didn't jump on the Bear bandwagon right away either. It took me, I didn't catch that one until the first season was done, where there was so much talk about it. I'm like, let me see this thing. It's based in Chicago and everything with the sandwich place. Let me see this thing. Everybody's raving about it. Then it won all these Emmy Awards. So I was late to The Bear, too. So I'm like, you know what? Don't get, you know, you've been late to the game on a lot of these shows that you've turned out to be some of your favorites. Now, this one is getting these good reviews. They're comparing it to The Sopranos. Why don't you give it a shot? Yeah, I know it's the Penguin and it's the Batman thing and you're not into these superhero movies, but get past that because this doesn't sound like it's a superhero kind of movie or show. It sounds like it's very based in reality if they were comparing it to The Sopranos. Sopranos didn't have any CGI explosions and fires or going to other planets, okay? So I have to say, sat down, and my wife wasn't even sure what we were watching. I said, yeah, I'd like to try to watch this show. And I have to say, within the first 10 to 15 minutes, they had me. The acting was great. Colin Farrell was great as Oz or Oswald Cobb, known as the Penguin, but not throughout. They don't call him the Penguin all the time. They call him Oz. It's based in reality. There's an interesting backstory that goes on that is from the original Batman film that they based this world on and the character. In fact, I think the original director, Matt Reeves, was involved in the conception of this TV show, and he picked the creative team to make sure that there was kind of a segue and a connection to the film in the way the not only the characters and the background and the story, but the look of it. So much so that I'm going to have to watch now the Batman film with Robert Pattinson. I've got to see now, because there are references in the show to the Penguin's backstory, which lead back from the film, which makes sense. That's the obvious audience. So I'm going to have to go back now and watch that film to get a little more clued in. But I watched the first three episodes, and I'm hooked. I don't know if there are 10 or 8 episodes, but I'm hooked. And I have to say that Colin Farrell does a great job. He is completely unrecognizable in looks, in stature, in voice. He really has created a completely new character that is so far from him, you would never even know it was Colin Farrell. But he does a great job. And this character is very complex and very flawed. But he's an anti-hero. He's kind of, you're rooting this guy. He's like Tony Soprano in that way. That he is not likable. He is, but at the same time, you root for him. Because he is a flawed person and there is some emotion there despite the way he acts. So if you like The Sopranos, I'm not saying it's a ripoff of The Sopranos, but if you like The Sopranos, that was not a bad comparison. And they may be basing it somewhat on him. But, and I'm not saying that it's on the par of The Sopranos, but interesting in terms of the way the story is developing, some of the side characters. So I'm all in. I'm all in on The Penguin on Max. So if you have Max, HBO, whatever you call it, try this out. Even if you're not a superhero fan, I'm not either. But this is a very well-written, interesting drama with some definite twists and surprises. It is not a cartoony superhero kind of show. And so that's why it appeals to me. So I'm just giving you a heads up on it. If you are a fan of the first film, I think you should definitely want to see this show if you haven't watched it yet. Because if you like the film that came out a couple years ago, I think the continuation of some of that storyline and some of those characters, and now you're getting a little more depth into this specific character of the Penguin of Oz Cobb, you'll definitely want to see it. So if you haven't seen it, you should. But if you're like me that did not see the first film, and you're taking it for face value, they got me. I'm interested. I can't wait for the next episode. So much so that I'm even going to go watch that original Batman film, which, once again, I haven't seen any of these Batman films. Some of them, I saw the Christian Bale ones, but all these other ones, these Batman versus Supermans with Ben Affleck and all these other, I have not seen any of these. But Colin Farrell as the Penguin has got me intrigued. So all I can say is if you're a fan of that film, check it out. If you're a fan of Colin Farrell, you have to be impressed by the acting he's doing. If you're a fan of The Sopranos, you might want to check this out. It's a little violent, no question about that, but there's some really good storytelling, some interesting characters, and it's very well written, well acted, and there's not many shows that I'm excited about, but I'm excited about this one. So much so that for a couple of days, I didn't even watch my Price is Right reruns. Quack, quack, quack. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And don't forget to tell your friends, tell your family, tell anyone who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. Hope you enjoyed episode number 438. I'm Jim Tirano. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. From the end of my mind to your ears. Quack, quack, quack.